Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q4 FY23 earnings conference call of DMCC Specialty Chemicals Limited, hosted by TIL Advisors. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the opening remarks conclude. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Abhishek Mehra from TIL Advisors. Thank you, and over to you.
Welcome everyone, and thank you for joining this Q4 FY23 earnings conference call of DMCC Specialty Chemicals Limited. The results and investor updates have been emailed to you and are also available on the stock exchanges. In case anyone does not have a copy of the same, please do write to us and we'll be happy to send it over to you. To take us through the results of this quarter and answer your questions, we have with us today Mr. Bimal Gokuldas, Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Dilip Gokhale, Executive Director, Mr. Sunil Kumar Goyal, Chief Finance Officer, and Mr. Omkar Mamulkar, Company Secretary and Compliance Officer. We'll be starting the call with a brief overview of the financial performance, which will be followed by the Q&A session. I would like to remind you all that everything said in this call reflecting any outlook for the future, which can be construed as a forward-looking statement, must be viewed in conjunction with the uncertainties and risks that the company faces. These uncertainties and risks are included but not limited to what we've mentioned in our annual reports, which you'll find on our company's website. With that said, I'll now hand over the call to Mr. Gokuldas. Over to you, sir.
Thanks, Abhishek, for the introduction. And welcome to all of you shareholders. Thank you for joining the call. My colleagues and I are here to answer your queries, but before that, let me give a little bit of an overview about the operations. So as a quarter, it was better than the previous quarter and, of course, better than the one before that as well. There are a few reasons for this. You know, we had some improvement compared to the previous quarter, of course, because we had no shutdown this time. We had a shutdown in Roha during the previous quarter, which affected the operation. And there was also a significant slowdown in the markets because of destocking. That destocking reached, according to us, close to the bottom. And then consumption started again in this quarter, in the Jan to March quarter. Not back to the expected levels, but certainly better than the previous. The other thing is there was no significant movement in the raw material prices like we had in the July to September quarter. So we had more stability. We had better availability of raw materials and also improved logistics. In one way, that's also an indication of global slowdown. Because, you know, earlier containers, ships, space on vessels were not at all available, and now it's freely available. While we are happy that logistics costs have come down, you know, and they've come down to almost the pre-COVID levels, it's an indication that things are not all rosy in international markets. So we had a top line of 94 crores for the quarter and EBITDA of 17 crores, which is about 18%, is not a bad margin. However, it was also a case where, you know, there was some rebound from very low stocks at the customer end, and yet the prices are coming down. We are seeing, so although you will look at the top line as less than the top line of the same quarter in the previous year, the volumes are substantially better this time. But because of low prices of raw materials and finished products, that's not apparent in the top line itself. A profit before tax of about 9 crores, at about 10%, that's a reasonably good number, considering the circumstances. And, you know, I'd like to say a few things about, you know, the macro scenario. I'm sure you must have heard from other companies as well that the markets are not very encouraging at this time. The Chinese are back in the production phase, but they are not back in consumption. And consequently, they are dumping their products not only in India, but in other markets as well. So there is certainly pricing pressure, not only for DMCC, but for all Indian companies and all European and American companies as well. So that is one fact. The other fact is that the crisis in Ukraine continues, and it looks like it's going to drag on almost indefinitely, with neither side giving up much. So uncertainty in Europe also contributes to lower consumption, and more sort of uncertainty means less optimism, means less consumption. As you can all see from the sales of, you know, cars and electronics and things like this, all the discretionary spending has come down. So our end user industries, some of them are also not doing too well. Like, I mean, people are not buying that many shirts as they used to. So therefore, textiles, therefore, dyes and intermediates for dyes. People are not buying cars, therefore polymers and plastics as well as pigments are affected to that extent. This is seen and we are not too far away from those end-use segments. So we can also see that impact. But happy to report that our main, you know, all our capital expenditure, a large part of it for the foreseeable future has been done successfully. We have achieved the production levels and efficiencies that we wanted in the plants. And as and when the market turns for the specialty chemicals, we'll surely be there to supply. In this quarter, we are about a 40-60 split between the bulk and specialty chemicals segments. And as we go forward, we expect it to go up to, you know, 30-70 or so, again, depending on prices. Overall, that's what I'd like to start with, and I'm happy to answer questions that I'm sure you will have.
Thank you, Abhishek. Thank you very much, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have our first question from the line of Saurabh Jain from Astute Investment. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, sir. Yeah, I'm happy to see that, you know, there is a recovery in the sales, and also just wanted to congratulate you on very good sales in exports, you know, considering the environment.
Thanks, sir.
Yes. So I wanted to understand that, you know, from what I see that we've grown in exports at 61% for the year, FY23 versus over FY22. So what is the volume growth in this?
So difficult to give you a volume growth, but it's all, I mean, it's at least this much in terms of volume, probably a little more than that, because, you know, the prices are surely lower than the previous year.
Okay, so you're saying at least 60%?
Yes.
Okay, and any sense on, you know, how FY24, FY25 is looking, specifically on the exports front, in terms of volume growth also that you might be able to achieve?
So, you know, difficult to predict, and I don't like to give forward-looking statements. This call is mainly to discuss last quarter and last year, but I've presented the macro headwinds, and right. I think we are all subject to that. So I think any prediction at this time would be not correct.
Cool. Sure. But going forward, do you see that, you know, the exports business will grow faster than domestic, obviously in spite of the, you know, headwinds which you're having?
So, as I've said before in a lot of calls, we do show the export earnings and local earnings separately. But honestly, I don't differentiate too much. And I'll tell you why again. Because a lot of our customers are taking our product, doing one or two steps, and then supplying overseas. So if the overseas market is down, if there's a global downtrend, then our customers in India also will get affected. And it's not that India can work in isolation. You know, while we do import a lot of the pulp chemicals, we are not a bad exporter of the downstream specialty products. And in the specialty products, in fact, India is a net exporter or close to a net exporter, while in the bulk chemicals and other areas, petrochemicals, etc., we are a massive importer, net importer. So the growth of our sales, whether domestic or international, will obviously be linked to the overall markets, and no company and no country can really work in isolation. So we are watching what's happening in China. They are dumping, literally dumping. And obviously there's nothing much anyone can do about it if they choose to sell below cost. While companies are looking at alternatives to China, you know, companies in Japan, companies in the US, everywhere, you know, what they are willing to pay as a premium is not very clear. And it hasn't happened yet. So on the, since you asked this question, let me take a step back and also talk about a little bit which I missed in the opening, that we made significant investments in sustainability and we continue to do so. We have one more project which we'll complete this year, which will reduce our carbon footprint again substantially. And there's an EU carbon tax which is going to be there for companies which have a high carbon footprint. So we, you know, apart from looking at the markets and looking at the processes, products, everything, we are looking at the sustainability side. And as and when there's a value to low carbon footprints and environmental commitments, we will be right there at the forefront. And I believe our footprint would be amongst the lowest in the industry and surely within our peers, and surely compared to anybody in China. So that's not happened yet in terms of, you know, generating value. But as and when, and it's certain that it will. It's just a question of when it happens, we'll be there. So, sorry, back to you if I need to clarify anything else.
No, that's great to hear. And, you know, so just on, you know, the top three products, would you be able to give us the volume growth in that and the, other than the top three products, volume growth, you know, on the specialty side?
So I don't distinguish. I would like to give individual products, but there was growth across the board. Let me put it that way.
Okay, okay.
But so existing products as well as new products. I know you're asking about our mature products as well. But they grew as well, if that's the answer you're looking for.
Sure. But the newer products also, I mean, you are seeing growth and traction, I mean, besides the top three products?
Not as much as we would like, simply because, you know, when there is a downtrend, people don't have time or money to invest in new product approvals as they would in normal times, you know. And when prices are going down anyway, like when the Chinese are dropping prices, you know, people are first looking at the bottom line rather than anything else. So, and then now, again, because of easy logistics, you know, that whole supply chain risk, all the purchasing managers have forgotten. So, let there be some kind of a consolidation phase when there's an uptick in the market. I think there'll be much more traction for new products.
Right. But if I understand what you're saying is that it's taking longer to have your customers switch from their existing suppliers to you for the newer products?
And vice versa.
Okay.
You won't get knocked out easily either.
Right. Yeah, going forward, it'd be great, you know, if you can get some sense on volume also, you know, since the prices of the products are actually so volatile, it'd be great to get some sense of the volume also, if you're able to disclose that.
Yeah, I can tell you that the volume, you know, is substantially more, although I would not like to get into, you know, total volumes or anything. Anyway, that's irrelevant because 1 year ago, we just had started our sulfuric acid plant. That's 100,000 tons of barrage. So that those volumes would dwarf anything. And you have to look at it from that point of view. So, yeah, we don't disclose individual product volumes. We'll continue not to do that.
Sure, but on an aggregate basis also, if you would be able to give that would be helpful. If
yeah, but it is more. Let me put it this way, that there is a growth in overall volumes as well.
Okay, thank you and all the very best. I'll come back.
Thank you. A reminder to participants to press star and one to ask a question. We have our next question from the line of Shiva Kumara Swami, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello?
Mr. Swami, yes, please go ahead with your question.
I am audible?
Yes.
It's not very clear. Can you come closer to the mic or something?
Hello, is it audible now?
Yes.
Sir, regarding that, being a specialty chemical segment, we are facing some pricing issue from Chinese when the Chinese are opening up. Are we, these molecules are in that specialty chemical or commodity chemicals?
So most of that Chinese impact would be in the specialty chemicals because, you know, in our bulk products, you know, there is different competition but not necessarily from Chinese. And most of our bulk chemicals are sold close to the factory.
No, sir, because as you told it, we are facing that competition in the specialty chemical segment itself. In my opinion, specialty chemical means it's the high margin, low volume products. So, if Chinese dumping has started, it means your manufacturing is a specialty chemical or it's related to commodity chemicals?
So, even in the specialty chemicals, there is competition. We are not alone. We are not monopoly producers. And yes, there is higher margin than in bulk, but that doesn't mean that Chinese cannot compete in that.
Okay. And my second question is regarding, we are investing in technologies like continuous flow chemistry, biocatalysis, regarding that one. Are these technologies related to only pharmaceutical? Or it can be applied to our chemical processes also?
So they're very much applied to our products as well. In fact, we have been doing flow chemistry since a long time. One of the advantages we have is that all our processes, even for the for some of our specialty chemicals, are continuous. You know, therefore we are amongst the lowest cost producers in the world for those products. Yes, pharmaceutical industry is working on flow chemistry, but it's not that it is restricted to pharma industry only. In fact, according to me personally, I believe that for the hazardous chemicals and particularly for upstream, it is more important to go to flow chemistry than the pharma industry, because we are handling larger volumes, more dangerous chemicals. We would benefit much more from movement towards flow chemistry. So I personally recommend this, and we are personally practicing this as well.
Okay, that's thankful and that's all from me, sir.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Ankit Gupta from Bamboo Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity.
Speak a bit louder, please.
Sure, sir. Is it better now?
Slightly.
Yeah. Sir, if you can talk about, now since the prices of our products have dropped, so at optimal capacity utilization of the new plant, how much revenue on a consolidated basis we can do when we reach, let's say, optimal capacity utilization?
So, again, the prices are dynamic. On what basis you want me to project? So if I would have looked at Q4 22 numbers, 104 crore, if the same prices were prevalent today, we would have done at least 30-40% or 50% more than that, So on what basis, should we take it? Because when...
Let's say March 23 prices. Let's assume current last quarter's prices of around, let's say we did 95 crores of top line. So let's say if the current prices sustain, how much revenue can, our both the facilities generate?
So the current prices are also reflected in the low raw material prices. I just want to clarify that as well. It's not only the finished product prices.
Sure.
And I believe we could do, what happens is we run the sulfuric acid plant at both locations in any case at 90% and upwards capacity. So there's limited headroom on the sulfuric acid side. On the downstream products, we do have some upside. I would say at least, again, this is an estimate, but at least 30 to 40% extra we can do on the downstream side after our recent expansions at the edge.
Sure. So let's say, we have a run rate of around 100 crore per quarter. So let's say for downstream products, when we ramp up at optimal capacity utilization, we can touch, 130, 140 crore kind of quarterly run rate?
Something like that, yes.
Let's say since prices of the raw materials have also come down, do you expect the margins to go up now, since the realizations have fallen for us? Do you think that, margins can be better than our historical levels going forward?
So, first of all, future projections are impossible to make, and I don't make them.
Sure.
But what happens is, mathematically, if your margin remains the same in absolute terms, but your prices come down for both raw materials and finished products, then as a percentage, it increases.
Sure.
As a percentage, you may see a better margin at lower prices and a lower margin at higher prices, but not necessarily in absolute terms.
Okay. And so on the boron side, we have been facing challenges, do they still continue or we are seeing some improvement on the boron side?
So certainly some availability improvement on the raw materials side, also the logistics side. So, earlier we were not getting the raw materials on time, etc. Now that situation has eased and we expect to, have a slightly better run rate on the boron business in coming time.
And that will also lead to, improvement in margins there?
Certainly, if we do more volumes, we'll have better margins, overall margins, absolute margins. We don't want to predict going forward absolute numbers or anything like that.
But we should see some improvement, compared to last 2-3 years that we have been facing challenges on that front.
Yes, there certainly has been improvement, especially in the last quarter on supply availability.
Thank you, Anish. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to participants to press star and 1 to ask a question. We have our next question from the line of Saurabh Jain from Astute Investment. Please go ahead.
Yeah, sir. Just a follow-up question. Wanted to understand what kind of capex should we pencil in, for us for FY24, FY25, broadly as we see now.
So, not a significant number, nothing compared to the last 2 years. That's all I can say.
Okay, okay. And you know, depending on obviously how the environment is, do you have a certain time frame in mind as to when you might think of the next level of, you know, maybe expansion?
So with so much uncertainty right now,
right,
we are not looking at any major large investments. If you had a look at the cash flow, you know, we started paying down some of the loans. And
right,
I think with the high interest rates and everything, that is more prudent the thing to do. I think we'll wait till we generate some more operating cash flow and also wait for the interest rates to come down a little bit before we get aggressive again.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, no, I must congratulate you on, you know, the net working capital is well in control and we've managed it quite well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Yogesh Tiwari from Arihant Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for taking my question. Am I audible?
Yes.
Sir, just on the boron chemistry, so just wanted to know that does boron have alternate application to lithium, and can it be used in the electric vehicles and become a like a major driver for our company?
So that's a little bit of an R&D question, but I can answer you. I'm not an expert on the EV side, but you know, more than electric vehicles and more than the lithium, they are looking at hydrogen fuel, the hydrogen storage using some boron compounds. So when it comes to you know, alternatives to this lithium batteries, so lithium has its own problems, environmental issues, plus dependence on very few countries. So when on a bigger scale you're looking at alternative to electric vehicles, when you're talking about fuel cells or something like that, then hydrogen is required. And because it cannot be piped easily or transported easily, you have to look at some source of solid form of hydrogen. And that's where there is R&D work being done on some boron compounds which can store hydrogen, but not directly in EVs as far as I know.
Sure, sir. So just to understand, from where do we actually import like the raw material for boron chemistry? Like from Europe or through a trading partner in Asia?
So there are a few sources of boron in the world. So the US, South America, Turkey, and also China. And we would look at importing from the most economical source and most reliable source. That's all I can say about where we source from.
And sir, has the raw material prices for boron actually like increased significantly in the last year? Like there were some news around it.
So the prices have increased, but at least the availability is better.
And sir, lastly on boron chemistry, like when do we expect we can, or what level volume level do we expect a turnaround in the boron division?
So we would need to make some investments to have a significant increase in the boron business, and we are not ready to make those investments yet.
Okay, sure. Thank you, sir. That's all for my time. Thanks.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star and one on your phone now. Participants, may please press star and one to ask a question. We have a question from the line of Nikhil Upadhyay from Securities Investment Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I joined the call a bit late, so sorry if this question has been answered already. But on the demand side, like last two quarters, you sounded pretty cautious on the demand side, both for the new products on the specialty side, for which we had done the CAPEX. So how are you looking at the overall scenario now?
So still, what happened in the, particularly in the October-December quarter, is a lot of large end users, they did a destocking, saw prices coming down, they had no visibility on sales, so they just stopped buying or reduced it substantially. So there's no further reduction now, as far as we can see, but it hasn't picked up significantly as yet. So it's a very sort of soft market scenario at the moment across industry. There are a few exceptions, but in general, there is not enough consumer demand, and there is excess production from China, as I've already mentioned. So that's sort of making the overall market looking quite difficult.
Okay. And for the products for which we had some demand visibility from the customers, even there the pricing has gone significantly down, or even the demand is remaining weak. So is it a combination of both which is impacting? Or?
So the pricing is more a reflection of reduction in the raw material prices also. But the volume demand is a volume drop is significant, in an overall sense. For our, since we did an expansion, we've seen an increase in the total sales. But that's because we tapped some extra business, or we had already some pipeline which we managed to fill. But there is. But certainly, that whole optimism is not there, which we would expect. And I don't think it will come back until this whole... there are two major issues happening. One is the crisis in Europe, and the second is the interest rate cycle. So hopefully the interest rate cycle has peaked, and with easing of interest rates in the future, or at least flattening first and then easing, there should be some consumer sentiment improvement. And, once the consumer starts buying, then there will be demand from the industrial side as well.
Okay, and last question. So, on the CAPEX which we had done, would it be breaking even as of now at the production level, or is the utilization not enough to meet the cost, the fixed cost?
So we are surely breaking even, but we've not made the investment just to break even. We are expecting a much better upside, which we haven't seen.
And we would be operating at 20-25% kind of utilization, or more than that?
So as I mentioned earlier, on the pulp chemicals, we are above 90% in any case. We have to operate those plants. But on the specialty chemicals, it's lower, and we don't have exact percentage utilization. But I'll say that there is room for growth.
Sure, sir. I'll come back in the queue. Thanks.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Shiva Kumara Swami, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes.
Sir, thanks for the follow-up. Sir, regarding the specialty chemical segment, that number of steps in the process involved in the manufacturing of that chemicals, means from raw material to end product. How many steps are involved in that, sir?
So there changes from product to product, difficult to give you a general answer to that question. But it's multi-step. They're typically multi-step.
Sir, in general, multi shifts means it's 2, 3, or 4 in general. You know, if you.
There is no general answer to that. It could be 2, 3, or 4, or more.
Okay. 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 Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star and one on your phone. We have a question from the line of Yogesh Tiwari from Arihant Capital Market. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for the follow-up. What I understand is like last year, somewhere in between the prices of sulfur-based compounds, it has declined from about 35,000 rupees to about 10,000 rupees. So just wanted to understand like what would be the prices now and what would be the scenario as of now.
So, you know, you can look up any of the publications for the current price of sulfur. I don't have it offhand, and that may not be the right forum to discuss here as well. But it is substantially lower than what it was at the peak, and it is stable at the moment. But there, it's a pure commodity, and there are a lot of dynamics which can affect the upward and downward movement. So, I mean, if I could predict the movement of sulfur in the future, I would rather play on that than do anything else. So, difficult to visualize. But at the moment, it looks stable.
So, just to like understand the worst case scenario, like what would be an estimate for the industry cost of production, wherein that would be like a bottom for sulfur prices. So if an approximate number for what would be like an average cost of production for industry for sulfur based.
Sorry, I didn't get the question.
So just to understand like what would be the worst case scenario if sulfur prices fall further. So like what would be the cost of production, the industry cost of production if somebody is producing sulfur?
So it's a well-known phenomenon, well-known fact that, you know, roughly 0.33 or 0.34 tons of sulfur is required per ton of sulfuric acid. That is for everybody. And if the price of sulfur goes down, the price of sulfuric acid also likely to go down, although it's not necessarily true because it's not a fixed formula. The market dynamics of sulfuric acid and market dynamics of sulfur are completely independent and quite unrelated.
Okay, so, but just to understand, like, what would be an average cost of production if somebody is producing maybe now a ton of sulfuric acid? So what would be the average cost of production for it, approximately?
I just told you what is the sulfur ratio, so it would depend on... It depends on the price of sulfur at that time.
Okay, sure. And sir, next question. Hello. Yeah. Hello.
Yes.
Yeah. And sir, one question on the export front. So, are you seeing any uptick in demand from Europe regarding sulfone-based products in different months?
There is right now no uptick in demand from Europe for anything. I think there are too many internal issues, and until they tackle those, I don't see them becoming optimistic on the markets.
Okay. Okay, sir. Thank you very much for it. Thanks.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Sajal Kapoor, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my questions. Hello, Bimalji. As an organization, have been visiting CPHI events quite regularly. Anything you can share from the recent CPHI event in Japan?
So, in general, you know, Japan and India are moving closer together, you know, politically as well as business-wise, economically. There is an, you can read in the papers almost every day there is some investment into India from Japan. So the Japanese economy is not growing. They are threatened by the Chinese politically, and they are looking for alternate partners. So also their style of working, although is very different from Indian style of working. So there's a cultural gap which we need to sort out. But I think Japan and India will come closer together in every way. Because even at the top political level, there is a meeting of the minds. You can see a lot of infrastructure projects in India are funded by the Japanese. They have a lot of money, they have a high consumption, but they are low growth. And they are looking where else they can invest so that they can participate in the growth of other countries. So India is certainly one of the top friendly countries with Japan.
Right, that's helpful. I mean, Japanese culture is very different, and you alluded to that. Their requirements are also very different. They are very stringent in terms of compliance requirements. Do we have what it takes to sign longer term contracts with Japanese customers, or will it be more like on a spot sale basis? For Japan and also for the Indian customers, is it like we do longer term contract supply agreements with these pharmaceutical companies both in Japan and in India, or is it mostly spot sale based?
So we have been supplying to Japan for many years now, and I don't think there's a problem in meeting the requirement. Of course, you have to be consistent. Of course, you still have to be competitive. They still look at Chinese prices, even though they don't want to deal with China. But they still do deal with China. In fact, the biggest partner is still China by far. But, most of our specialty business is not on spot basis. Whether it is a written contract or unwritten agreement, understanding, it doesn't matter. But we don't have to go looking every month for, new customers and all that. So it's quite stable from that point of view.
Right, right. And finally, what are those one or two things that you would like to change in DMCC going ahead, and why do you think those changes are important?
Well, difficult to answer a strategy-related thing. Of course, I'd like to see bigger top line, bigger bottom line, that's for sure. And we are working towards it. And also we are looking at, we have placed a lot of emphasis on sustainability. So I'd like to see us improve on that front as well. Although I would say we are one of the front runners, but still I'm not satisfied. So this is the areas where we would look at in future.
Right. And as we grow bigger, do you think that we need greater investments in R&D and innovation? And does that mean hiring more qualified scientists, more people, or is it something on the capital investment side that we have to undertake if we want to get on to the next level of science and innovation supporting these global innovators?
Of course, CapEx as well as people. You can't do anything without people. And R&D surely will play a big role.
Any specific targets that you have for this year or next year to beef up the R&D?
We are recruiting. We are strengthening our team. But we don't have a particular target in mind for, R&D spend or anything. Typically, we are doing about 1 to 2% of our top line as R&D spend. And we'll continue like that for a while.
Right. Do we get any kind of advances from these Japanese or other customers to undertake specific synthesis projects on their behalf?
Sorry, I didn't get the question.
Sometimes these innovators, when they ask specific custom synthesis projects, I've seen this with the pharmaceutical API players in India, the customers are more than happy to give advances for procuring raw materials and initial R&D work. Have we experienced any such transaction where a customer is willing to give us advances for a specific custom synthesis project requirements of theirs?
So we've done small cases of this kind of thing, but not in any significant manner.
That's helpful. Thank you for all the responses and all the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you. As there are no further questions, I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Bimal Gokuldas for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Thank you. So thank you all for attending. I hope it's been worth your time, and it's good to get these questions. It's always good to hear from the investor side what your views are, what your concerns are, and of course, we will adjust ourselves accordingly. But look forward to interacting with you all in the future as well, and thanks for your support.
Thank you. On behalf of TIL Advisors, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.
Thank you.